The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back.
Good evening, patriots and freedom fighters. Broadcasting from my home studio in downtown Belmont, Pennsylvania, the state of independence. Worldwide, as National Intel report on Republic Broadcasting Network, Liberty Lighthouse. Well, anywhere else you hear it or see it. I'm Peter Serafine, your host for this 2 hours of common sense and constitutional discussion. Tonight, I've got Brent Hamachek going to join us at the bottom of this first hour. So 6:30 Eastern time, if you're watching or listening live. Brent from humanevents.com, commongroundcampus.com, and brenthamachek.com. And then at the top of the second hour, 7 p.m. Eastern time, if you're watching or listening live, Dave Summerall, the champion for the Justice for J6 Prisoners movement, is going to be coming on. And I've got a whole bunch of questions for him. There's been a lot of sentences for the J6 prisoners handed down recently. The Proud Boys leader got like 15 years. Wow. So I want to talk to Dave about some of that. But I've been watching or listening to mostly a con law class, a constitutional law class from a law school. And not surprised but disappointed in what I hear. As expected, it started out with one day, one session, where they actually talked about the Constitution. And then they immediately went into court cases, court decisions, court opinions about how the Constitution should be read. Now, the Constitution was written for you and I, we the people. It's written for us. It's written in plain language. Even though 25 of the 56 men in the room were lawyers, they still wrote the Constitution in common language for us. They could have filled it with legalese and clauses and all that kind of stuff like lawyers do, but they chose not to. So now we have this whole precedence system set up where judges and lawyers look back at old cases to see how the Constitution should be read. What does it really mean? Well, we've got to see what this judge 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 100 years ago, we got to see what this other judge thought about it. It's his opinion. Now, lawyers will tell you that the precedence system is there for continuity's sake. It's there so that you don't have weird, random judges making just completely obscure rulings. But if you actually look at the precedents over the last 240 years, you'll find that even with precedents there, they do that a lot. The Supreme Court has reversed itself many times. And it's done it in as little as 4 months. They've decided a case one day that says X, and then 4 months later heard a very similar case and said why, and changed the X ruling, negated it, wiped it off the face of the planet. In 4 months. That seems crazy to me. But then it also made me think of other stuff. We'll get back to the Supreme Court in just a minute. Let's talk about government itself. Now, I'm of the belief that all government, regardless of what form of government it is going to grow. It's going to take, and when government grows, it tramples on rights. Government power is the inverse of human rights, citizens' rights. Now, our Constitution was written to put constraints on government, to keep it in a box, to keep it within the four corners of the document itself, as they say. So that was the purpose of the Constitution. How well did it work? How long did it take for our federal government to just ignore even Let's not even talk about the unenumerated rights, the common law rights. How long did it take our federal government before it completely ignored enumerated rights, rights that are spelled out in black and white on parchment? How long do you think it took? I don't want to answer that yet. I want to give you a chance to answer that question before I do. So being a live call-in show, you can call in to 512-248-8252. Or if you want to answer or comment, but you don't want to be on the radio, you can text 64-MY-RIGHTS. It's 646-974-4487. 512-248-8252 to call in, 646-974-4487 to text your answer. After the ratification of the U.S. Constitution in 1789, how long did it take for our federal government to completely ignore black and white enumerated rights that we, the people, have? While I wait for you to answer that, I want to talk about a particular Supreme Court case that has always rubbed me wrong. And it's one that I'm pretty sure I've mentioned before, but I'm going to do it again anyway, because I think it's that important. And it's one of these cases that I think everybody should know about. It's from 1942. But before we get to the case, we need a little bit of background. So let's talk about 1938. It's 1938. The country's in a depression. And Congress passes a law. They pass a law to try to, regulate the costs of food. No sense, right? Let's think. It's a depression. There are literally millions of people starving in our country. And Congress passes the Agricultural Adjustment Act of 1938 and limits how much farmers can grow. Now, if you're one of the starving people in the streets of the country, the idea that Congress is going to limit how much a farmer can grow seems counterintuitive. Seems a little counterintuitive to me. I would think, grow as much as you can, feed the people. But that's not what this act did. This act limited how much a farmer could grow so that government could regulate and control the prices. So they put a limit on how much wheat you could grow, for example. And it was based on, how much land you had. If you had X number of acres, you could grow Y amount of wheat. Well, a gentleman, an Ohio farmer named Filburn, Roscoe Filburn, decided, I'm going to grow more. And Roscoe Filburn actually grew a lot more than he was allowed to grow. He grew 293, I think, bushels more than he was allowed to grow, like 3,000 pounds of wheat more than his federal regulated mandated allowable amount. So he grew 3,000 pounds of wheat. Now, he gets charged with violating this law and ends up in the Supreme Court. Now, the government's position, even though it was never stated in the documents or in the courtrooms, the government's position is, if he's growing 3,000 pounds extra, he must be selling it on the black market. Although they was never accused of that, that was kind of the assumption that was given. Now, Roscoe Filburn says he grew that extra wheat to feed his livestock and feed his family, and that he didn't sell it anywhere. So how did the court go about this? See, Roscoe, Mr. Filburn and his attorneys, they argued that I'm not selling this wheat. I'm using it for my own personal consumption and that of my own personal animals. It is not part of commerce at all, let alone specifically interstate commerce, which Congress is allowed to regulate. Roscoe's argument was, nope, my wheat is my wheat. I'm not selling my wheat. You have no ability to regulate it. which seems perfectly reasonable to me. But what happened? What did the justices of the Supreme Court, in their infinite wisdom that they get when they put on those black robes, what did they find? Well, they said that Roscoe Filburn should have grown less wheat and then bought what he needed for his livestock. He should have produced less for his own personal consumption, stuck within the limits from the federal government. And they found him guilty. See, the government, the Supreme Court, they kind of aggregated the idea. You know, was it really a big deal that this one guy, Roscoe Filburn, was growing 2,000 or 3,000 pounds extra wheat? No, that's not really that big of a deal. But if 100 farmers did that, or 1,000 farmers did that, well, that's enough to impact the cost of wheat. The price of, you know, free markets, right? Higher supply, lower prices. So they argued that the Supreme Court argued that if enough farmers did this, if we allowed this to continue, then it would drop the price of wheat. Again, millions of people are starving, like literally starving in the streets of our country at the time. So would a lower price really be a bad thing? That aside. So that's what they said. They aggregated his effect with what if other people did the same thing? And it would have this negative impact. So basically what they argued was that by not participating in the interstate commerce, Roscoe Filburn was impacting interstate commerce. That was one of the first, progressive era cases that just dramatically increased the power of our federal government. Because now, before this, Congress could only regulate a product if it crossed state lines. Now, Congress was basically given the power to regulate anything that affects the cost of an item that crosses state lines. So his ridiculously local activity of on his own farm could have impacted the cost of wheat. Therefore, he was impacting interstate commerce. Therefore, they could regulate it. Now, this is just one of many cases like that. What happened with the EPA? It's long been established that the federal government has the right or the power to regulate navigable waterways. Now, to you and I, what does that mean? That means a waterway large enough for a boat would be a navigable waterway. But the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has looked at this case of Willard v. Filburn and said, well, Filburn wasn't really on interstate commerce, but we could regulate him because he impacted interstate commerce. And the EPA says, well, your little tiny stream that runs through your property, well, it might not be navigable, but it leads to a navigable waterway. That way we can regulate your little stream. And then they took it a step further in a case that was just recently turned down or overturned, where the EPA was trying to say that an adjacent marshland, wetland, which didn't even have a stream on it, no visible water at all, was under their jurisdiction because it led to a stream that led to a river that led to a navigable waterway. And finally, the Supreme Court kind of slapped them down a little bit. There's a lot of cases like this. And then all goes to this precedence thing. What some other judge said impacts how I'm supposed to react here. Now, when we opened the show, I said, how long did it take for our federal government to completely ignore the enumerated rights of we the people before they started stomping on? I'm going to give you that answer right after I tell you about my new book. My new book, A More Tyrannical King. It comes out in 10 days, September 17th, Constitution Day. I compare the tyranny of our current government to the tyranny, the infamous tyranny, of King George III of Great Britain during the time of our American Revolution. I think it's my best book yet. This is my third book. I think this is my best one yet. And I would absolutely love if you all would go out and pre-order it right now. Pre-order it anywhere you can buy books. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Books A Million and Barnes & Noble. Get paperback or electronic copy. Pre-order it right now. Tonight, please. Over the course of the day, you know, woke up this morning and I had jumped many spots on the sales rankings. Must have sold a couple overnight. I would love to sell a couple of more and see how high in those sales rankings we could possibly get. So A More Tyrannical King, anywhere you buy books. Or you can go to liberty-lighthouse.com, click on the books links there, and you can see all the different places that you can buy the book. Lots of links there. All right, so back to the question. See if I have an answer in text message. No. Nobody has answered the question yet. The question is, how long did it take? I think it took 9 years. And I base that on the Alien and Sedition Acts. Now, you might think that Hamilton arguing for the First National Bank was a violation of the Constitution, but you have to say there is an argument to be had that maybe a bank is not unconstitutional. That's not really black and white. So I'm gonna look over that one. I want the first plainly obvious violation of our civil rights, our enumerated rights, and that would be under our second president, John Adams, while we were at war, we weren't even at war yet, while there was pending war with France coming, and we had the Alien and Sedition Acts where it became illegal to speak ill of your government. 9 years. 1798, the Alien and Sedition Acts passed. That's it. That's what government does. Government gets put in place, government grows. That's it. I got one person texted and said 10 years. That was Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. Pretty close. And somebody else brought up the Whiskey Rebellion. Okay. The Whiskey Rebellion, was it really our federal government completely violating our rights? They were trying to tax whiskey. They have the right to tax. So, I don't know. But there's other things. There was Shays' Rebellion before the Constitution was even written. Our government took maybe 9 years to stomp all over our enumerated rights, the ones that are just plain black and white. The First Amendment. Stomped all over it 9 years after we were created. And the Supreme Court, they didn't strike it down. The Sedition Acts weren't gone until after Jefferson became president. Jefferson, one of the first things he did was get rid of it. But John Adams, the second president of the United States, stomped all over your First Amendment guaranteed right of free speech. That's insane. And you think, you know, the court is supposed to save us, right? The court is supposed to look at the laws and protect us from the laws. But at different points in our history, the Supreme Court has taken a stance that we're going to presume that a law is constitutional unless you can prove otherwise. Well, how's that for independence? Like the judge, the courts are supposed to be independent from government. They're supposed to be their own separate thing. And if they start out with the presumption that the law being adjudicated in front of them is constitutional, how independent is that? I argue it's not very independent at all. And with the Supreme Court, there's a lot of really shady stuff that has gone on in the course of our republic. We all know, you know, Plessy versus Ferguson, right? Remember that one? The Supreme Court case that basically authorized segregation, separate but equal, throughout our country. You know that case has never been overturned by the court? Plessy versus Ferguson is still valid case law. Now, it was made nullified by the 13th and 14th Amendments, but the courts never nullified it. And there's a lot of them like that. There's a lot of these old cases where maybe they put some boxes around it or whatever. They never nullified it. Now, somebody is probably going to call in and say, what about Brown versus Board of Education? Read the decision. Brown versus Board of Education did not overturn Plessy versus Ferguson. Brown versus Board of Education says that Plessy has no role in education. So separate but equal did not apply to schools, but it was still a valid case, valid case law, which I think we need to get rid of that term, case law, because it's not law. It is an opinion of 9 people wearing robes. And how many times in our history, in the Supreme Court dockets, how many times can you go back and you see cases like Plessy versus Ferguson where they were just wrong? How often do we look at the dissenting opinions of some of these old cases and say, see, this guy was right, but he was the only one, or he was one of two. He was not the majority. Case law is a problem. And I think precedence in itself is a problem because it is proven ineffective. If the Supreme Court can overturn its own rulings in as little as 4 months, in at least one case, back-to-back years in several cases, then the argument that case law creates continuity just crumbles. It's not contiguous to reverse yourself a year later. I think any case that goes in front of any of these federal judges, the first thing they should look at is this thing constitutional based on just a plain reading of the Constitution? Ignore case law. Ignore precedents. And if it can pass that first step, if it can just get past the plain reading of the Constitution, then maybe it's time to crack open the case law books and look back at what other tyrants in black robes may have said about the case before. And for the last 20 minutes, I've been talking about this, and I didn't even bring up the fact that who's bound by the Supreme Court? Only the two parties named in the case. It doesn't apply globally, automatically. It's only the two parties in the case. Of ambition and the scars of the anyway, it's time for this first break. Like I said, promised, we got Brent Hemachak on the other side of this break. We're going to be back in 3 minutes. Got the little black car, little black dress. We got the guru and the trailer and the full course dress. We got the software, hard drive, CD-ROM. We got the exploitation.com. We got the pages.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Ciroc grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio, and what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
No one can be said.
Welcome back. I'm Peter Seraphine, your host for the evening, and I'm here to remind you that free speech is not free. Support this free speech network and whatever network you're watching or listening from, because we don't get government help. We don't get help from Google's algorithms. We don't get help from, well, anybody. So help these free speech platforms share out their links, use their promo codes, visit their sponsor pages, visit their own websites, read their stuff. Help them out any way you possibly can. And as I promised, we have a guest this evening.
Where do you go when you want the truth about current human events? You go to Brent Hamacek over at humanevents.com, brenthamacek.com, and over on Common Ground Campus. And now welcome into studio, Brent Hamacek.
Welcome, Mr. Brent Hamacek. How are you this evening?
I always love that stirring introduction that's played. It fires me up. I'm ready to take the field for a half hour here.
All right. Hey, did you have anything in particular that you wanted to talk about this evening? Because I have been just, I started the show by saying that I've been taking a constitution law course designed for law students. I've been watching the seminars and videos and stuff on YouTube and listening to the debates and the discussions. And quite frankly, I'm disappointed in the entire law system based on what I'm hearing in this course.
Right.
Anything in particular that you want to talk about?
Well, I'm always happy to follow the lead, but I was interested in listening to you prior to the break and talking about the court system and what's going on. And, you know, I think that America needs to be sort of properly terrified at the moment. So we've just witnessed, I mean, there's a number of cases, but the one that gets a bunch of press these last, 24, 48 hours, I lose track of time at my old age, but within the last day and news cycle is Enrique Tarrio's sentence for sedition at an event where he wasn't even present in the city. As you were mentioning, dragging out a bit of statutory revelry that's been almost antiquated, right, over time. And it was interesting because if you go back after January 6th and you go a year plus later, there was a bunch of articles written about how it was funny that they talk about overthrowing the government and conservatives were writing, you know, no one's been charged with sedition or treason, right? And so how can this be? And it was very shortly after that, after all of those opinion pieces came out, that those charges started to be levied. This is not a coincidence, right? Nope. So think about what was happening. And people really need to think about this, is that folks inside the criminal justice system who had been looking at cases and not leveling certain charges heard people in the public square say, well, why are these people why is it being said they're trying to overthrow the government? They're not even charging them with that. And so then these folks who are supposed to be upholding the law, what did they do? They sat back and they scratched their chin and they said, okay, let's do that. This is not the attitude that prosecutors are supposed to have.
Nope.
Prosecutors, unlike criminal defense attorneys, you know, it's kind of interesting. People always like to criticize criminal defense attorneys. Conservatives pick on criminal defense attorneys. Criminal defense attorneys are the last line of defense, the last line against a totalitarian government. A criminal justice defense attorney, their job is to win at all cost. They are supposed to do everything they can to get their client off, no matter how guilty their client is. They have got to fight for that client because they're not just fighting for that client. They're fighting against a system to keep it in check.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecutors, on the other hand, are not supposed to be concerned with winning. They're not. They're supposed to be concerned with the administering of justice. And that's a very different thing. So should they want to win if their cause is just and they clearly have a criminal before them? Well, of course they should. But they need to do it always keeping in mind that notion of justice. That's their goal. They aren't about winning. They're about administering justice. The prosecutors in this country, and it's not just at the federal level, it's systemic, have preoccupied themselves with winning the case. And that might sound like it's what they're supposed to do, but think about it really hard. They're not. And to the extent they play that game, they play with our liberties. And now we're seeing that firsthand with an absolutely preposterous conviction and a more preposterous sentence. I've said it before on your show. If January 6th was an attempt to overthrow the government, it was led by F Troop, for right. goodness sake. If you don't know the reference, if you're too young, Google it. It was a fun show. Try to still watch it on Hulu or Netflix or something. Who knows? But in any event, this frightens me to no end. And final point on the Tarrio case, and you and I were talking off air about it a little bit. What's happened to him is a personal matter of injustice by a system that should scare us all. But if you want to look at something even bigger to pay attention to when his sentence is appealed. Because if that outrageous sentence is upheld within the system, one level up where they're supposed to shake their heads and have a clear look and say, okay, all right, trial's over and everything. Let's settle down here and take a look at what's going on. If they uphold a 22-year sentence, I would suggest to you that a lot more is lost than just one case in the January 6th trials.
Yeah. Well, one of the comments that I got in text message that we didn't I didn't mention on air was, you know, each case should be heard on its own merits. And that appeal process, that's, like you said, it's usually in front of a panel of judges and not just one. And at that point, you know, they get to shake their heads and start it over. Like they can look at what was presented, but they also have the clear-eyed vision of not being in the heat of battle. Now, you said that the defense attorneys are the last line of defense, and I've often said that it's actually the jurors, we the people that serve on juries, that are one of the last lines of defense against tyranny. And that was something that was echoed by Jefferson, or something I stole from Jefferson would be more accurate. The idea that a jury can sit, you know, a jury member can sit in the jury box and just refuse to find somebody guilty of a crime that is an unjust crime based on an unjust law. In modern times, they call that jury nullification. Right. But back in the old days, that was jury independence. The jury, they're not government employees. They're not public officials. They're not tied in any way to any branch of government. They're picked from we the people. So that, I mean, that's why one of the first courses I built for my new online platform was a case about jury independence. And we need to have more people in this country that understand the power they have when they sit in that jury box.
You're right. And I mean, look, you make a very valid point. I think the point is one that I used to make a lot in the world of civil law, because we all complain about the trial lawyers and the large liability settlements and so on. But the last time I checked, it's the members on a jury who render those verdicts and make those awards. It's not the lawyers. So if people on juries would stand up and say, look, I'm sorry you slipped and fell in a Red Lobster restaurant because the floor was wet, but get over it.
Yeah.
Well, this could all come to an end, right? Yeah. I actually didn't say that randomly. I was on a jury once for a slip and fall at a Red Lobster restaurant. And, but in the criminal world, of course, it's every bit as true, the responsibility that jurors have. And jurors get things wrong all the time. I mean, we had in Illinois, and I hope I get the number right, I believe it was 23 death row inmates back during George Ryan's time as governor who were set free because of the work that was done out of Northwestern University in exonerating them through DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. So these were people who were sentenced to death on death row. The jury found them guilty, sent them to the gallows, if you will, awaiting the gallows. And then it turns out the jury was wrong. And so here's where I'll go back, though, to some extent and defend the point I made prior. First of all, how on earth can an innocent person be prosecuted? Because if you think about it, by definition, the prosecutor didn't know enough to prosecute them in the first place because they were wrong.
Right.
They were wrong. This isn't about a jury saying, well, we looked at the evidence and we're not sure, so we're going to acquit. It's different. I get that. But in the case of people who were exonerated, that means they were innocent. And the prosecutors prosecuted in the first place. Now, I happen to think that if a prosecutor wins a guilty verdict against somebody who's later proven to be innocent, that prosecutor should be sentenced to jail for the same amount of time that person was sentenced for. That would straighten them up in a hurry, right? But prosecutors have no skin in the game, none, zero. If they make a mistake and an innocent person suffers, so what? It means nothing to them. But those juries that hold the responsibility to acquit, the only side they hear, the only person they really get to hear from who's making that compelling argument, presenting the case, is that defense attorney. Right. And that is why they carry so much responsibility and such a burden. I think that they are heroes among us. And so I break from my conservative brethren who love to support the prosecution and detest defense counsels. And I take the other point of view.
Well, I agree with you. And until relatively recently, I was a big supporter of the death penalty. But because of instances, like you said, you know, the 23 people in Illinois, we make too many mistakes. You can't, in good conscience, support a death penalty
right.
when there have been probably hundreds of people put to death that were innocent and people that have been let go after spending decades in jail that were innocent.
Right. Find me a person who thinks the government does a good job of delivering the mail. You can find one.
You know, you remember, I'm a mailman, right?
Yeah, we still have a mailman. And we know all the horror stories about the government delivering the mail. All right. So they can't take a letter from point A to point B. But we trust them to kill the right person. Well, that's silly. Right. Mm-hmm. And it is why, again, I sort of break from fellow conservatives. I'm not in favor of the death penalty. And I think, by the way, if you're going to have a death penalty, there ought to be an asterisk by it. And that is that someone can only be put to death if a member of the family harmed by the capital offense pulls the switch. Because if we're going to take someone's life, the state is going to do it. It ought not be done impersonally. And it ought to actually be done by somebody who said, you killed my father. You were convicted by his peers. So I'm going to pull the switch. And if nobody in that man's family can pull that switch, then he lives. But in general, I don't trust the government to kill the right person. I don't trust them to do much of anything right.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. All right, a quick shout out, shameless self-promotion. Please go to liberty-lighthouse.com. And particularly, I would like you to go to the books page. liberty-lighthouse.com/books and pre-order A More Tyrannical King. It's my new book. It comes out in 10 days. And it's $10.99 in paperback form, $5.99 in an ebook. And I would really love it if you go buy it. It's my best book yet. It's my third one, and I'm very proud of this one. So proud of the first one. Each one gets better, in my opinion. The first one was okay. Second one's better. Third one's better yet. Fourth one is already underway, but that's going to be about a year before I can get it out. But liberty-lighthouse.com/books and pre-order A More Tyrannical King. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Buck v. Bell. Are you familiar with that case?
Not by citation. Please go further.
Buck v. Bell was the sterilization of imbeciles.
What is the line? Three generations of imbeciles is enough, right. Or something like that.
Right.
Yes, so the Oliver Wendell Holmes line. Forgive me for not
knowing it by name. I wouldn't have known it.
Citation.
I wouldn't have known it by name either, except for listening to the con law class recently. Thank you, Sarah, for putting the link in the chat, the video chat there to liberty-lighthouse.com/books. Okay, so Buck v. Bell, they decided it was during eugenics, and eugenics was basically settled science for the time, and eugenics was the idea that we could make society better by getting rid of the imbeciles. But imbeciles wasn't what we think of it today. It wasn't just stupid people. It was more basically any undesirable. And so it went to the Supreme Court, and the idea was the three generations. Well, Sarah, the mom, she was deemed to be an imbecile because she was pregnant and had a baby out of wedlock early. So she was deemed to be imbecilic because she was promiscuous, supposedly. What I don't believe came out in the court case is that she had a baby out of wedlock because she was raped as a teenager. So, okay, there's a wrong finding by the court. I can't remember the daughter's name. I want to say it began with a V. But the daughter Well, she was kind of imbecilic, but that's because she got syphilis. She was, you know, a perfectly healthy, smart girl who could read and write and everything, but she got syphilis, and syphilis ate at her brain a little bit, and she started to have those little lapses every now and then. And then the baby, which was to be the third generation, the baby was only 6 months old at the time. And this is like the 1920s or 30s. They really couldn't tell a whole lot from a six-month-old baby. So the court held that, yes, in Virginia, you can sterilize an imbecile after you can show three generations of imbecility. And they were all, you know, opinions. It wasn't fact, but that was our Supreme Court. And it was all based on settled science. Eugenics was the popular opinion of science at the time.
Well, it was a popular derivative of, well, let me go back and make a bigger point. There are a handful of human beings throughout history who would be most distressed at what's been done in their name. Jesus Christ comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
So does Karl Marx, by the way.
Yeah.
And so does Charles Darwin. And so eugenics was the offspring of Darwin's original work, where, you know, he studied so many species, and he left humans out of it. He had nothing to do with humans until his next book, which is a very difficult read, by the way, but worth reading. Darwin kind of got bullied into it by relatives and peers to sort of take that his whole evolutionary work and that species work and transfer it to humans. And then we know what was done with it. And so, you know, from Darwin, you know, you can skip to Margaret Sanger if you want, and the mother of the eugenics movement in the United States. You can also point to Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. No Darwin? I don't know. Maybe no Hitler. I'm not making the argument. I'm asking the question. And the point is that what we do over and over and over again as a species is we take the good works and the good teachings or the good ideas or provocative ideas of one, and we turn them into movements that allow humans to harm other humans. Literally, since the day of Christ forward, we've had people rationalizing why harming somebody in the name of Christ is what he would have wanted us to do. And I suspect that's not the case. And just like the work of Darwin, he would have been appalled at what was happening in the 20th century, all a derivative, a corruption of his work. And there's nothing, by the way, in the Soviet Union or China or Cuba or Vietnam or anywhere else, for that matter, that Karl Marx would recognize or support.
No.
Yeah. And yet we go forth in their name. Right. And that's what people do.
A couple of little things here. A text message from a listener that says science by definition is never settled. And I have said that many, many times. I completely agree. Number two, during the Nuremberg trials after World War II, the German quote unquote scientists were asked if they had invented this idea of eugenics, of sterilizing and killing off one entire race. And they said, no, we got it from the Americans in Virginia. The really funny thing about that is, Justice Holmes, who wrote that horrible, horrible decision,
right,
had taken a leave from the Supreme Court to be one of the judges that sat on the Nuremberg trials. So he was there when the Nazis said, we got it from you, man.
Right.
Dave Summerall is joining us early. And since we were already talking about the J6 stuff a little bit, let's see what he has to say about anything that we're doing tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest thinks hot dogs are just American tacos. He is Justice for J6 Prisoners Advocate and StopHate.com owner, David Summerall.
Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hello, David.
Can't hear you, Dave.
Juggling everything, man. Bouncing from phone calls and back and forth. How are y'all today?
Good. I saw you bouncing around there with phones and stuff, and you've been connected into the video chat here for like 15 minutes, but you weren't in your seat at all.
No, I've been walking around, going back and forth. You know how it is. It's good to see y'all, brother.
Well, I know at one point, I think Dave said he hadn't seen Brent in a while, so I thought, hey, you know, you're
here. Here I am, proof of life.
The one and only Mr. Hamachek. It's good to see you, my friend.
So thank God there's only one of me.
I know, right? We can't handle any more than that.
Right.
See, Brent brought up Enrique's sentencing. And I said, you know, we got Dave Summerall coming on later, and Dave's the big justice for J6 guy. So we were talking about it, and Brent seems to think that the big deal is going to be, does it survive appeal?
Right, right. That's a great question. Does it make it that far? Do they file it properly? Do they get a shot at it? And do they kick it up from there? And would the Supreme Court see it if it made it that far? These are all real questions, real concerns. It's the same attorneys, the same basic people that are going to see the appeal that had the case. So there's really limited hope in that in the first place. But, you know, this exculpatory evidence, all the things that these judges are not allowing into the case should be great material for appeals. We just have to see if they'll look at it. It's like the evidence that we submitted for the trials themselves many times got censored away from the juries or the judges as well. They would decide not to let them view our discovery. So when you see that, you see the just travesty of justice for these people. They're not getting their fair day in court. You could argue vigorous defense, but what can you do when the judge won't let you submit video? So, I mean, it's the same stuff.
And I don't know, Dave might know this, but I mean, from an appeal standpoint, there's two different things that you can do, and they're not mutually exclusive. One is to appeal the conviction itself, and the other one is then, of course, to appeal the sentence. My understanding is that if you appeal the conviction and it's denied, you then still have the ability to appeal the sentence. And, you know, it is interesting also, you mentioned the Supreme Court. Just living in Realville, where I sadly reside along with the ghost of the late Rush Limbaugh, I can't imagine this Supreme Court granting cert to this case. I can't imagine them doing it. They're not going to want to get involved. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I hope I'm wrong. On some level, I hope I'm not wrong. I hope it's not needed, right? I hope we don't find out. I hope that something happens sooner before that level. But if our last ditch effort is the Supreme Court, I suspect we're in the ditch.
I agree.
Because I don't think they'll grant cert.
No, I agree. And that's the travesty of this justice system, the Department of Injustice, as we call it, because there's no fairness. Really, I mean, when it comes down to evidence, and they literally censor that away from any possibility of seeing the light of day, you have no defense. And most of these attorneys, especially the public defenders, I can't say that about the private ones, but they just simply try to negotiate a plea deal. I literally got a message from a guy, and he said, look, I told my attorneys about you to hire you as an investigator. They said, well, you know, the government doesn't pay us enough to hire experts. Now, we know that's not true. You know, mm-hmm. We know that there's funds for that. And then they said, we really don't want to go through evidence because then we would have to file motions and arguments, and we just want to do the bare minimum. They just want to hold their hands and walk them through the appeal so the government can get their pound of flesh. There's no justice in that.
Well, and if you've got proof that attorney said that, that should be grounds right there for a retrial. I mean, that's, you know, ineffective counsel.
What's terrible is, to be honest with you, Peter, we have proof and proof and proof. Judges just biased comments about J6ers in general, comparing the event to a Hitler scenario, you know, comparison. Insurrection talk, you know, Judge Walton saying he's not letting any of these J6ers through his court. You can't make statements like that and still consider yourself impartial or blind justice. There's no such thing there. They have ripped that blindfold off and put their whole weight on one side of the scale at our detriment, all for politics, all for this election, all for their power and their pound of flesh to show who's in control of the people, and that we just need to step in the line. You know, we've had so many more arrests. They're cranking up the arrests. One of the prosecuting attorneys was overheard by one of the defendants the other day. They said they wanted 1,400 more arrests as soon as possible. For what? These people have been roaming the countryside for 2.5 years, and now you're going to say they're a danger and they're a threat and they're a flight risk? I call BS on that. They've been sitting here not doing anything, not going anywhere for 2.5 years, and you're going to round up these grandmas. And we see, guys, the suicide numbers going up, you know, and that's not anything for any other reason than to add to the January 6th body count. And that's completely pressure by the FBI and the DOJ, you know, and that's the reality that our congressmen and our senators really seem to have a disconnect about what not only is good for the people, but what keeps us alive. And to let the FBI just bounce around and do this to people is ridiculous.
I agree. Hey, we got like 2 minutes left before the break, so let's give that to Brent here to tell the world what's going on in the world of Brent Hamachek and Common Ground Campus. And
sure. So, this weekend, depending upon when folks are seeing this, this weekend, the 9th and 10th of September, we're actually going to be down in the Brownsville, Texas area along the border with John Rourke, who's put together a border cleanup program. I don't know if your audience might have seen the garbage pile. Our southern border literally looks like a landfill, and I'm not exaggerating. It's so we'll have equipment and volunteers, and we're going to step down to the part of the country where Joe Biden says there's no problem. And we're going to go clean up the problem and hopefully to draw some notice to it, build a little community, have people of different political walks of life involved. And
good job.
That's what's next. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Brent. Be back in 3 minutes, my friends.
This is Elizabeth McCabe, a.k.a. Lucky One of Truth Frequency News. I wanted to tell you all about Extendivite from HeartDrop.com. Y'all know I check everything before I air it. When I heard about Extendivite on TFR, I went to HeartDrop.com and started my research. It's got cayenne. That's good for blood and circulation. It stimulates the blood flow. It's got garlic, which fights bacteria like antibiotics, and it lowers the cholesterol and blood pressure. It also has milk thistle, which is the best detox for liver. I couldn't wait to try it out, and I'm glad I did 4 months ago. And here's obvious results. My hands and feet don't get cold anymore. The varicose veins have faded too. My wrists don't hurt after typing all day. Now, I tell you all this because it's true and I want you to really live life. Try Extendivite. Go to heartdrop.com and order it.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new, healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
You can't
can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.